You are listening to Mephista Research Life, funded by EU Horizon 2020, MSCA Grant Agreement 861152, reaching out to the scientists of tomorrow.
This is Stefano Negrini,
who
is ESR number one at Lille University for the Mephista project. So for those listening, I'm Carola Woods, project manager for Mephista, and I'm getting to know Stefano a little bit more today. And we're going to be talking about science, about Mephista, and what this research life is like. So I just wanted to kick off by asking you, Stefano, why is your research important? I'm not a scientist, it seems really detailed and complicated, but can you relate it to the real world for me, please?
Yes, I think we can do that. So first of all, I would say that, so I'm part of a team. We are a team of six people. I know that you were going to know us very well during those interviews. So without going into the technical details, the primary objective of our research is studying the so-called frequency comms, which is, you know, a very fancy word, but he found application in very practical stuff. For example, maybe the first thing, the most important is what is called LIDAR or LIDAR. I don't know in English the right pronunciation, but it is the light equivalent of what it was a radar in the technological world. So LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging. So it's a system which basically is like the radar, but it doesn't use radio waves. It uses light, laser wave. So the idea is to be able to locate and measure the ranging and the distance of an object by using light. Where this found its application, but for example, in meteorology, for example, this is one example, or since in the last years is something very, very common and which is finding its way through the industry as well, in autonomous car driving. Of course, if you want an autonomous car, the most important thing is that the car is able to see where it's going, because you don't want that it goes something, you know, a tree or a person, maybe. So it's very important that those new technologies start to develop. And one of the most important applications that we have in the project of the Mephista is, for example, autonomous driving. So developing the physics behind that, and also the technology that allows to being applying directly on those. And more personally, so from my point of view, so my role inside of all the project is indeed the study of the physics behind those process. So you will not find a immediate application of what I'm doing, because we are doing mostly, you know, laboratory experiments very linked to the physics of the process. But maybe one of our girls or guys said the Mephista, we will take some time and pain to transform what we are doing here as a, let's say, physical process to a product, to something.
I see. So you're really working on the pure physics side of things.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, wow. So did I understand you correctly, Stefano? Is it meteorology, the weather?
Yes. Is that the correct word? It could be.
Yeah, I think so. I just wanted to confirm because I didn't know whether I'd heard it correctly. For me, it's fascinating and it's humbling to, you know, to know that there are scientists spending many days, hours, well, years researching this. So I sort of work in broad brush strokes with my understanding. Do you mean they're like visual? It's like a visual radar. It's a special kind of laser.
So it depends by the application. As far as I know, usually, I mean, for this kind of application, they don't work on the visual spectral range, but more like in the infrared range, so something which is actually invisible to human eyes.
Oh, I see.
But that depends from the application. I do not exclude that maybe for some particular application, it's using a laser that you can actually see with your eyes would be the right choice. So
do you work in a darkened laboratory to see the infrared or?
No. Luckily, no. I have a colleague which has to turn off the light anytime he has to do a measurement. But luckily for me, not. We can use normal ambient lighting. And for the visualization, we use some special instrument, which is called spectrum analyzer. Yeah, another fancy name.
Gosh.
Yes, it's not something that you can visualize, directly, but you need an instrument to be able to see that.
So why is it called a comb? Are you able to explain to me? I mean, because I've heard this word many times, C-O-M-B, not a cone, a comb.
Like for your hair.
Yeah, for your hair. Why is it called that?
So it's called that. No, it's really, I think that there is some kind of science with just the objective of find funny names for stuff, because it's like that.
It needs a name.
Yeah. But by the way, so how can I explain? So if you take a laser, normally, what we usually say is that a laser has only one single, or let's say that with a bit of approximation, but not to be too picky, not to be too scientist, only one single frequency components. So that means that, for example, in visible light, in the visible spectrum light, when you turn on a laser, you see only one color, for example, green, blue, red, or whatever, just one single color. Okay. What frequency comb means is a laser which span its frequency in a wide range, in a relatively wide range, in a discrete manner. So, for example, if I can do an example in the visible light domain, it's like turn on a light and see, for example, three different components: one green, one red, and one blue.
Okay.
Same on the same laser. This is just quite exemplification of the thing. It's not the real thing.
The idea
is that, so starting from a single component source and obtaining something with more components, more color at the end. And the wider it is, the better it is, of course. But the wider the better. But again, that depends on the application. So comb, because if you visualize the so-called spectrum, you actually see a comb of components. So something with
the spikes.
Yes, spikes, exactly.
Like the teeth of the comb.
Yes, single spikes, quite tight arrangement. But this is why it's called frequency combs.
Why are these so important to this laser work?
Because, for example, if you want to do things like, okay, so I taught you about LIDAR technology in the meteorological forecast. You know, matter interacts with light in different ways. And depending on the wavelength of the light which is interacting, you have a different behavior of the matter. So what happened is that for some wavelength, something can be blur, so cannot pass through. But for other wavelength, something can be completely transparent, like a windows, for example.
Okay.
So it can be useful to have a source which have different components. So maybe you can build something which can see that. By quoting that word, seeing through different things. Maybe you want different data about what you have in front of you, and there is fog. So maybe for some frequency, fogs that do not allow you to see perfectly what you have in front of you. But for other frequency, fog is not a problem. It's completely transparent. So you can use one single source and have a different.
Okay, so you're saying that the laser, correct me if I'm wrong, the laser has got different kinds of eyes that are linked to frequency.
Yes, this is actually a wonderful explanation. I think that I'm going to steal it to you because I like it very much.
So if my eyes, do you work on setting the laser's eyes to see things that need to be seen?
Yes, I think that we can say it like that.
Yes. Okay, so if it's an autonomously driven car, you're looking out for obstacles, and that would change the frequency of the comb.
So actually, I'm talking as a non-expert in the field again, because I'm just like the one who stayed behind the curtain just to, you know, making all the strange stuff. So I'm not an expert in autonomous driving, but yeah. You can say yes. So basically, you offer a source. You are offering a set of eyes, and then the car will, in theory, you can decide what to do with those information that the eyes is providing to you.
Okay, so is the frequency providing the visibility?
Yes.
Okay.
We can say so. By changing the frequency, you change what you are watching.
Oh, I see.
Or maybe it's better. You are changing what you can see.
Okay, what you can see. All right then. Gosh, you must have to analyze the object. You must know how to read.
Yes. Usually, you are interested in things like relative position between you and the object, maybe the velocity, the relative velocity between the object, things like that.
Okay, so you're looking at the matter, but you're also looking at things like distance.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and that all becomes data which impacts the frequency.
Yes. I mean, actually, most of the information are extracted by some kind of processing of the data. Okay, so first, what you want to do is be able to illuminate everything you see, everything you have in front of you, collect all the data, and then from that data, there will be a very thorough, very deep signal processing process. So basically, yeah. Something which goes into a computer. Artificial intelligence will find some application in here. And
yeah.
From out of that elaboration, you will have all of those data. So the distances, velocities, etc. So it requires more steps. It's just not like having a laser that tell you the distances or something like that, but usually you have a set of data, and those data are elaborated, and then from that you can have
And just relating it back to you, you work on creating the right kind of laser, is that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yes. Wow, it's really technical, and I know you've had to simplify it for me like hugely, because I've seen your graphs and everything. It's
yes.
It's very humbling.
Mephista Research Life, reaching out to the scientists of tomorrow.
So what is the best thing? I mean, you've been on, how many months now have you been on Mephista? It's over a year, isn't it?
Since October 2020, so it's...
Okay, so not quite a year then. So you're really, because some of the ESRs just started, so you're a
yes,
little bit...
Yes, I know.
Yeah. So what is the... What's been the best thing so far about the project, Stefano?
I think that so the bad things of being a researcher, when I thought about it, it's like, you know, being able to play with Lego, you know, the game for children, but as an adult, that is always what I feel when I think about that. Because if you're a curious person, and you like to go deep inside what you're doing, or if you like to make stuff like I do, it's like your work. It's what you really want to do. So in an environment like that, where they said, okay, this is our problem. We have to find a solution. We have to find a way to resolve it. We have to do something. It's like a playground for a researcher. Of course, I would like to be precise, because it's not always easy. Okay, it's not a game at all. Okay, it's a real work. So you have to do a lot of preparation. You have to study. You have to do office work, paperwork every day, of course.
Yeah.
But there is the eureka moment, you know, when you... But it's quite rare. It's not an everyday thing at all. But when it happens, just pay for everything.
It must be amazing to have that eureka moment, indeed.
Yes.
So, have you had? Can you describe any eureka moments you've had? I don't necessarily mean Mephista, but perhaps during your masters or.
Well, actually, you let me remember one thing. So I did my master in Italy, and not really in photonics. It was on a different topics. It was a subject called information theory, which is wonderful, but is not very related with physics and optics. And it's a very, as the name suggests, is quite theoretical. So you can do stuff, but mostly simulation, creating algorithm, things like that. Okay, very computer-based work. And I remember that we were trying to replicate an algorithm, which is quite important. It was very important for my thesis at the time, and it didn't work. It didn't work for, 2 months consecutively. I work on it every day for 2 months, and it didn't work. Then one day I was coming back home from a university, which is about 15 kilometers away. So I was doing it by train. So I had 1 hour of stop. I had my laptop, and I was keeping trying to doing this stuff. And I was reading my notes, and I start again to think it again, once again. But the most difficult thing when you are in a loop like that is try to think in a different way, because anytime you keep thinking in the same way, and so you keep doing the same error. So at the end, I found something quite stupid, quite small, and I changed that, and it worked, and it was like such a relief. I mean, it wasn't a real eureka moment because it wasn't a mine. I just was trying to replicate the algorithm of someone else. So it really wasn't my idea. But when it works, it was like...
Oh, gosh. So what do you think happened in your mind? Did you just have... Was it just a moment? Did you think, I'll try that?
So I think that there was maybe one or two things left to control again that really I was giving that for granted. I think that was my bigger mistake. I was giving that for granted because I thought, no, it can be that. I'm sure that this is right. And that was a mistake. That wasn't actually right. So because it's like, you know, the most simple thing that you do every day and you say no, can be wrong, right?
Yeah. And
it was wrong indeed. So this was a big learning moment for me. Now I don't give anything for granted when I do things like that.
What qualities do you think you need to be a researcher? I mean, the last story certainly talks of persistence, not giving up after 2 months.
Yeah.
What other qualities?
What other qualities? So, okay, persistence is absolutely a necessity, but I mean, I think that is important in a lot of the aspects of everyday life of anyone, whoever you are and whatever job you are doing. I think that that to be a curious person really helps you because, I mean, you really need to go deep in,
yeah,
deep down to the rabbit hole, as I said. So, and there you need a bit of curiosity to do that, I think. Also, you have to be patient. Very patient because results doesn't come very often and most of the time they are not really nice. So you have to be patient and start the thing, do the thing over and over again until they are not good.
Have you always been interested in science?
Yes.
Like,
always.
What, since being little?
Yes, because I remember when I was a child, my parents, I think it was a Christmas present, give me one of, you know, those little kits with experiments. In particular, it was an electronic related one with, you know, there was a little motor, a resistor, a LED, something like that, you know. For me, it was like, oh wow, this is super cool. So I started there. Of course, I didn't understand anything because I was way too little to understand anything in electronics, but it's always fascinating me. It really had a lot of attraction for science in general. So at the end, I keep doing my studies in Italy. We call it technical school. So,
okay,
very technical oriented, university, and in the end here. But yes, always been interested in science in general.
And what made you choose photonics, or did photonics choose you?
I would say the second one. Photonics choose me. Photonic choose me. Because at the university I've done engineering, in particular I've done electronics and telecommunication, so it's not really photonics oriented, I would say. You do some photonics, you do some optics, you know, it's a part of a very big program. In theory, you finish the university and you've seen a lot of different subjects, so it wasn't very oriented. But I was finishing my master degree, so my master thesis, I don't know in English how does it translate?
Yeah, your master's thesis. Yeah.
Yes. And I was interested in doing an experience abroad, so to make a period abroad. My professor, or one of my professors in hypnotics, told me, why don't you look on the European side? You know, EURES portal is where usually the all of the proposal for you know, PhD abroad. It's a very big net for this kind of thing. So I found that, and I said that's absolutely interesting. And also, it was a very very practical project. So there were involved laboratory experience and things like that. And I was really impassioned for that because, as I said, in Italy, engineering is very theoretical, is very all about study. So, and I really wanted to put my hand upon something real.
Yeah, get your hands dirty.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that, what advice could you give to new scientists? Because, I mean, I loved chemistry at school, but I kind of went for languages in the end. But I kind of regret not doing chemistry in some ways. But what advice would you give to people trying to make a decision?
I would say to... How can I say that? Don't be afraid of try, at least, because I know that if I were younger and if I'd been more brave in my choice, probably I would end in studying physics or something like that. But I don't really feel ready for this kind of stuff because, you know, physics, I do physics at university. For me, it was like, no, I thought, no, absolutely, it's not for me. I can't do that. So, I choose the second job that was engineering. Which anyway, it's not easy at all. But it was more.
Sure. Sure. Still really difficult.
But again, don't be afraid of try. Because if it's not your path, you will have time to change. But don't be afraid of try something if you have the curiosity of it. It's really worth it, I think.
Yes, yes. How are you enjoying France, Stefano? Because you're from Italy.
Yes. No, actually, I'm okay here, I have to say. I expected something different because, you know, this is my really first experience abroad. So, I mean, it was very, it was an emotion for sure, but actually I found a very, very similar from cultural point of view. I understand how close we are actually. It's not, I mean, for people like Ching or Naheem, which comes from the other side of the world, is,
yes,
must be a completely different experience. But for me, actually, I find pretty well. I feel pretty well about that. I mean, it's not really okay. The languages is different.
Yes.
The weather is a little bit different, but not that much. But apart from that, no, I find myself very well. I find very kind people here. Really, a lot of kind people.
And just going on to languages, because I know when I went to school, I used to kind of, people would get separated into arts, humanities and science, but here you are a scientist, but you're still having, you know, English, now you're learning French. Mm. Do you find languages come naturally to you?
So I don't know. I remember that when I was at technical school, which is the same as high school, I would say, that level, I really liked English. I had a really brilliant professor. I think she was a bit severe, but you know, when you have to get the respect of 20 young guys, all boys, so you have to be like that.
Okay. But so she was strict.
Yes. I liked English, but maybe because we start studying English very early in Italy. With France is a bit more difficult for me, which is strange because I'm Italian, and in theory French and Italian are strictly correlated. The idea of knowing, understanding, be able to speak another language, for me it's beautiful. I think it's really wonderful. It gives you like, it's beautiful.
Learning another language is an amazing thing.
Yes, it gives you like incomparable tools for everything, because you can communicate to people, and we always underestimate the power of communication, I think. It was one of the most important evolutional step in the humankind, was being able to communicate between each other. Now, we are in our world now is evolved, we are all at the same level, okay, but languages still represent a barrier between us, if you want. So we don't have any more technological barriers because we can communicate in whatever means, internet, radio, etc. But knowing more languages is, I think, the final tools that you need for the communication. And when you have communication, you have everything.
Totally. I mean, what I particularly like about Mephisto is working with different nationalities and cultures, for sure. Wonderful. Well, it sounds like you're absolutely in the right place, because of course at Mephisto you'll be meeting industry.
Yes.
And it's been a real pleasure, Stefano, to talk to you. So just to wrap up, this has been ESR1 from Mephisto, funded by the EU, and it's Stefano Negrini at the University of Lille. Thank you so much.
Thanks to you, Carola. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Mephisto Research Life, funded by EU Horizon 2020, MSCA Grant Agreement 861152.